Blog Talk Radio.
Well, you may throw your rock, hide your hand, working in the dark against your fellow man. But as sure as God made black and white, what's done in the dark will be brought to the light. You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar, go and tell that midnight rider, tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter, tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
Well, good evening and welcome to Walls in Our Minds. I'm here with my co-host tonight, Dr. Kate. And Red Beckman, I believe, will be kind of laying low listening to the show. He's got a little bit of granddaughter party going on tonight, and there'll be some background noise. So he's going to be attending, but mostly listening tonight. So, Red, enjoy your party, and I hope you make it back in for the last bit of the show tonight. We always open this show with a prayer, and that's what I'm going to do right now. Almighty Sovereign Father of Heaven, we just come before you, and if you will excuse me for just a second, folks, I am going to have to catch a quick call, and then I will continue that prayer. My apologies for that interruption. Let's continue to pray. Father in heaven, we just we're just under attack in this country, Father. Our country is has been pretty much taken over, as you are well aware, by people who want to knock you off of the top of the pecking order. It's their desire to be gods and not to surrender to you. And we are fighting that battle. We've got a huge spiritual battle that we're going on here now. They're attacking our unalienable rights. They do not acknowledge that they are unalienable. They do not even acknowledge that those rights come from you. Father, we acknowledge you as the ultimate sovereign. And we ask for your strength and your courage and your wisdom in order to fight this battle. And we know that we cannot win it without you. We know that you are the ultimate victor. And we're just praying that you would watch over us and be with us and fill us with your spirit, show us truth, and help us to spread that truth to others across this country. We ask that you be with us during the show tonight, that your spirit would fill us, and that the message that we would bring forward would be in accordance with your will and glorify you. It's in the name of Yeshua HaMashiach, Jesus the Christ, your Son, our Savior, that we pray. Amen. Gus, you have a live mic? And I believe also area code 925, you have a live mic. Is that you, Anthony?
Hi, Terry. Yes, sir.
Well, welcome to Walls in Our Minds.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing very good. Anthony, give us an update on a little bit about what's going on with this John Morse recall.
Well, right now we're a little bit more than halfway through it. We're getting ready to go into the final push here. We got about 3 weeks left to get our signatures in, and so far it looks good. I'm cautiously optimistic about it.
Well, you know, this show is actually a worldwide show, and a lot of our audience is from outside of Colorado. Although I'm sure we have a good group listening to us from inside Colorado tonight. We kind of need to give the people a little bit of background about just what this recall is about, who John Morse is, what's going on possibly even with some other recalls that you guys are working on. But can you give the listeners just a little bit of a background on why we're doing what we're doing?
Sure, absolutely. John Morse is the president of the Senate here in the Colorado legislature, and he's probably the second most powerful politician here in Colorado. And during the recent gun legislation that was pushed through, among other things, John Morse committed numerous ethics violations, including he changed the rules so that citizens could no longer, or well, that not every citizen would be able to testify on the bills. He pushed through all this unconstitutional anti-gun legislation. You know, he refused to listen to his constituents. He even went on MSNBC, and he said, you know, I'm proud of my caucus for ignoring emails and not listening to all of the, quote, gun nuts out there. You know, he was proud of that. And when he got into office, he promised to focus on jobs and the economy, and instead he's pushed everything but that. And even in passing these gun bills, he's caused companies to lose the state. And now Colorado's economy is going to lose millions of dollars and hundreds of jobs. He has pushed legislation that's incredibly unpopular. There was a 10-to-1 overwhelming resistance against this legislation, and he has just pushed it through because he's towing the party line. And he didn't believe that he could be recalled. And, well, we're going to try to prove him wrong. So anyway, that's a little bit of background why we want to recall him.
Well, you know, I'm an active participant in this recall. I'm out there trying to pull signatures together for that petition. We need about 7,200 petition signatures of registered voters from within his particular Senate district in order to make this recall election happen. And I've already worked a couple of gun shows with a couple of other volunteers down in Colorado Springs. And I'll tell you, it's actually been a joy to collect signatures because the people have been so gracious. They've gone out of their way. I mean, we've had people that have come to the show just to look us up to sign the petition, only to find out they weren't in his district and then get angry because they couldn't sign. And I've been listening to, you know, I've heard more cuss words. they'll say, some people will say, oh, well, what are you doing? And we'll say we're recalling John Morse, and they'll go, that bleepity bleep. I mean, I heard those words more than, I mean, they want him gone. So this is actually a fun exercise. To some extent, of course, we wish we didn't have to do it because this guy is—he's a Bloomberg stooge, is he not?
Absolutely, and in fact, the group that is supporting Morse, the nationwide group, it's called America Votes. They just gave $20,000 to the committee that's supporting Morse. And America Votes is just a collection of extreme leftist groups that are heavily financed by New York Mayor Bloomberg. So, I mean, absolutely, it's directly financed by Bloomberg. That's correct.
Well, when I was down at the Capitol testifying, I was really uncomfortable because John Morse was sitting right next to me when I was testifying. And he reached out and grabbed my hand. I really didn't want to shake his hand. A couple of fellows before me refused to and got a really ugly look from him. But I was really uncomfortable having him sit next to me. I felt like I was sitting next to someone who is a real enemy to this country and to our republic. And they just completely ignored all the testimony. It was just like it was like the people weren't there, and they just proceeded to do what they wanted to do and didn't care at all what the people said. They didn't care even what the sheriffs said. Did you see that?
Yes. Yeah, I was there for the testimony. I tried to testify. In years past, every citizen that signed up would be able to testify, but I signed up to testify on every one of them, and I didn't get a chance because he was one of the ones that pushed to change the rules on that, so that you wouldn't be able to testify. But they gave plenty of time to an out-of-state celebrity like Gabby Giffords and her husband Mark Kelly to testify. They don't even live here. They're not citizens. You know, they're from Arizona. I don't understand that at all. You know, that's just another example of the mentality of these people. So, yeah, I was there. I watched it. It was a travesty.
When I was there also, I've been politically active in Colorado for a number of years, and so I know a few people and are involved in, you know, in campaigning for some. And so there was a few folks that were there in the room who were insiders, and one of them said to me, have you heard the word on the street? And I said, well, I've heard a number of different things, but what are you speaking about? And they said, well, it's been spread through the Capitol that Bloomberg, who sent it one of his PR people to be there that day when it was going through the committee hearings, and each one of those Democrats had been given the message that if any one of them voted against any of this anti-gun legislation, that Bloomberg would personally fund their primary opposition campaign.
I don't doubt it for a minute. That sounds exactly like their MO. I didn't hear that one, but I believe it.
Well, that came from an inside source, and I've talked to four or five people again at the Capitol about that, and they've all confirmed the same thing, said, yes, we heard the same thing. We have a 719 area code hand up. Area code 719, you have a live mic. This is Anthony and Terry Dodd here. And would you like to say hello, 719?
Rob Harris.
Hello, Rob.
How are you?
I'm doing good. Give us your update. Anthony, how long can you stay with us?
I got to get going here in a couple of minutes, but I can hang out for a minute here.
Well, I think we're in good hands with Rob now that he's on with us, but stick in here as long as you can, and please comment. Rob, we're just talking about the Morse campaign to recall John Morse, and we'd love to get your intake on this. What are you seeing out there in the field, and how are the volunteers doing?
The volunteers are doing well. We've had quite a few step up. We could use just a few more to get us past these last 3 weeks to help get us over the hump. And we are adapting as we have to with the reality on the ground, be it snow days or rain days or lies from the opposition. And we'll just do whatever we have to do to make it work. So we are going door to door. We have a lot of volunteers. We have well over 100 volunteers that are out going door to door, as well as standing on corners, street corners, with signs for folks to be able to stop. We're actually going to be out this weekend at a lot of different street corners and intersections in Senate District 11. So folks can stop and sign the petition if they're registered voters in Senate District 11. And we also have folks that are going to be going door-to-door as well. And
well, Rob, why don't you tell us about all those sex offenders and felons that you guys have hired to collect signatures?
Well, I had one woman come up and with tongue-in-cheek say that she wanted to volunteer when she heard about the sex offenders, because she wanted to participate in that, but that was totally tongue-in-cheek. We don't have sex offenders and criminals. A good portion of our volunteers have concealed handgun licenses, which you have to have a background check for. We have teachers, attorneys, ex-police officers, ex-military, people that actually work on military bases. All of those professions, you have to have background checks. So there's a whole lot of people out there that have background checks already.
Let's fill our listeners in on what we're joking about, because it's literally laughable. If it wasn't so serious, it would be laughable. But our listeners don't know about the robocalls, so you might want to fill them in on that. I was being tongue-in-cheek when I said
so basically what has occurred is the opposition came out, and they have started a robocall that essentially is accusing our door-to-door petitioners of being sex offenders and criminals, and stating if we're not criminals now, we will be, and that we are coming to steal everybody's personal information. And I would like to just discuss personal information a little bit in regards to a petition. So when you're doing a petition to recall somebody or put something on the ballot or whatever that may be, there are six boxes on each line that have to be filled out. And that includes name, address, city, county, and date, and then the place where the person signs if they agree with the petition. So the name and address is public information. I would assume everybody knows what city and county they live in, so that's public information. So the only thing we can figure is that it's a private date. That's all we can figure is the private information.
Well,
who
has been hired to acquire petition signatures?
There is a company that's been hired. A Basic Freedom Defense Fund is working. They are our logistical support. They've hired a company that is augmenting what we are doing. We are an issue committee that is going. We have volunteers that are going door to door, and then we have augmented that with a company that is going door to door also.
Okay, but they're a company here in Colorado.
Yes, they are. They are local. I didn't hire them, so they don't work for me.
I can probably answer your question there, Terry. They're local. They're from Colorado Springs.
Okay, so it's more constituents, really. Most of the people that are out there collecting signatures are constituents of John Moore. So when he calls out and says this about in these robocalls, he's talking about his own constituents and the neighbors of the people that he's calling.
That is an excellent point. You are correct.
Absolutely. The people that I've talked to, because I talk to all the volunteers as much as I can, and obviously, my volunteers are running into the paid petitioners as they're out looking for signatures, and they've met these folks. They told me they're very nice, they're very friendly, and they're just normal folks, just like them. So it is typical what I call liberal left-wing fear-mongering. Throw a bunch of stuff out there and see what sticks. And that really is something that is done by, it was done by the Nazis. It was done by Nixon, done by Obama. And as Goebbels said, if you tell a lie big enough and keep repeating it, people will eventually come to believe it. And so that's Morse's modus operandi. Let's just throw a lie out there, and people will believe it to try to get people not to sign the petition. So
any guesses
doing.
About who's funding those robocalls?
There is no guess. It's public information. When they have an issue committee, the the whole few people that support John Morse have an issue committee. They have to file their expenses, and it's America Votes, which is funded in part by Bloomberg. And so that's New York money coming in once again, just like the New York just like the New York lobbyists were there for the gun control, and in Denver, Bloomberg sticking his nose right in the middle of it again. And this is his thanks to Morse for helping him pass some of the most stringent gun control in the nation.
Well, who's backing this recall effort? Is this a party? Is it a Tea Party?
I am.
Republican
I'll tell
party?
You how this, I will tell you how this started. Back at the first part of March, I was actually talking to my mom on Facebook. And I was seeing what was going on with Feinstein, however you say her name, and seeing what was going on up in Colorado and Denver. I was very frustrated, and I was talking to her, and I said, and I saw that the Republicans didn't have anybody to go up against Udall, and I said, you know, I should just run for United States Senate. She goes, yeah, well, they've got $4 million and a political machine. And I go, yeah, and plus I tell the truth, and that wouldn't work very well. Plus, I'm just ranting. But she goes, no, you know what you can do is you can become politically active. And I said, yeah, right, whatever. But then I started thinking about it. What can I do? I'm just a single individual that's frustrated, that's tired of having my rights stomped upon and seeing them taken away. So I started doing some research on the web and found out that in the state of Colorado, we're allowed to recall our politicians. Oh, okay. Well, what does that involve? So I did some more research, and I saw that involves obtaining 25% of the number of signatures that you have to obtain is 25% of the number of votes in the last election for that office. Oh, okay. Well, how many votes was that? Oh, well, that was about just over 28,000 votes. So that's about 7,200 signatures. Okay. I can try to figure out how to do that. So I started sending out emails to various of the sundry people all over the place. And then I happened to be up on the Denver Post blogs and saw a group that was previously called Colorado Accountability. They're now Basic Freedom Defense Fund. And they were putting some stuff together to try to do a recall and help others do recalls here in the state. And they were having a meeting here in Colorado Springs. So they came down, and I went to that meeting. There were about 40 or 50 people there. And they said, you know, we would like to help provide some logistical support to whoever is willing to help do this. But we don't live in Senate District 11. We just like to help support whoever is willing to do this because we're frustrated and Morse is impacting other people in the state of Colorado, and we're also in the state of Colorado. I said, well, I'm your man. I'm going to step up and do this. I'm already planning on doing it. And you guys just happen to have gotten a one-month head start on me. That's really the only difference between them and me is that they had that one-month head start. But I was going to be doing this with or without them, and they just are some more people that are just frustrated and tired of having their rights taken away. So I started doing that and started trying to pull in some different like-minded people who were interested in participating in the recall and put together the wording for the recall and got all that stuff put together and got the petition put in, and we've been going full bore since then. And we have until June 3rd to get the 7,200 valid signatures for turning in to the Secretary of State. So I live in Senate District 11. I am one of Morse's constituents. I've sent multiple emails to him. He has refused to acknowledge any of them. And as he stated on the Rachel Maddow show, he views my emails as just vitriol. And I'm not cussing in them. I'm not doing anything negative. I am just providing my viewpoint. And he has kicked me off of being able to comment on his Facebook page, because when Senate Bill 252 came out, which is the energy bill for increasing rural energy costs, I put a comment on there, and within a minute it was gone, and I tried to comment again, and I could no longer comment. Once again, no profanity, nothing other than, you know, why are we trying to do this to hurt business in rural Colorado? I thought we were trying to help business in Colorado. That's what you said you were going to do. So I am a constituent, and I'm leading the effort here in Colorado Springs. Now, I'm not doing this alone. There are lots of other people here in Colorado Springs that are helping, and the three people that are on the petition, all three of us live in Senate District 11. So this is by far not an out-of-state thing. This is right here in the heart of Senate District 11 in Colorado Springs. That's where this originated. And for Morse and his minions to come out and say this is from out of state is a crock of bull.
Well, the pressure to take away our unalienable rights is certainly coming from out of state, and there's a lot of people that are paid off that, in my mind, are treasonous to our state of Colorado that are serving in our house, both of our houses at the Capitol. And I am from outside of District 11, and I'm driving all the way down from up near Denver in order to participate in this recall, because I believe in what you're doing, and I want to commend you. I think it's important for people to understand that there is no party involved in this, no political party, that there's no one that I'm aware of that has any aspirations of even running for that office. So it's going to be up to that district or whoever to put somebody up once we get this petition drive completed. Then the political people can get involved, but somebody needs to run that's going to defend the Constitution and actually stand up for their oath of office. Because later in this show, and I've got people in waiting to get on here right now from New Hampshire, and they have filed complaints, formal complaints, against their representatives and committee members that have, for violating their oath of office by infringing on people's right to defend themselves in their state. And so they are viewing it as a criminal action. And at least what you guys are doing is holding them accountable. You know, I've heard all these statements about, oh, well, you know, he's term limited out. It's not worth the effort. I've heard all that kind of stuff. And to me, we cannot wait for another election. The elections are not solving our problems. We've got to hold these people accountable. So what you're doing, in my mind, is extremely important, for me to go out of my way to come down there and help out. And I'm just urging anybody that's listening to get their butts in gear and get these people out of office. We have the power to remove them if we'll simply take the action to do it.
Well, here's something to keep in mind. While I am very focused on recalling Senator Morse, he is not the only recall going on in Colorado right now. There is Angela Yeron down in Pueblo. They have a recall effort going on. Evie Hudak, there's a recall effort for her. Representative Rhonda Fields, the ex-con, there's a recall effort for her. That's an uphill battle because of her gerrymandering in her district. And Representative McLaughlin over in Durango, there's a recall effort for him as well. So there are multiple recall efforts here in Colorado. And the impact of those recall efforts should not be diminished because those recall efforts started. All of our recall efforts were going on when the gun control bills hit Washington, D.C. And I can guarantee you that those Democrats in the Senate looked at what happened in Colorado with the gun bills that passed here. And then they saw that five representatives were facing recall efforts here in the state of Colorado. And they said, we don't want to touch that. And they voted no. Now, there were several that voted yes, and they just don't care. But there were many in swing states that voted no. And that's why it's very important for us to be successful, because if we're not successful, those same Democrats in Washington, D.C. Those same Democrats in Washington, D.C. are going to say, oh, well, they may say they're going to recall people, but they're not going to do anything, so we'll go ahead and vote for gun control. So that's why it's very, very important for people to step up and help us get rid of these so-called representatives that actually think they are rulers. They are not rulers, they are representatives.
We need
all the help we can get to get the signatures we need to be able to have a recall election and get them out of office. To send a message that you cannot step on our rights.
Anthony,
on that note, yeah, I do. One thing before I go. What's interesting is when the Morse effort is successful, he will actually be the only state legislator ever recalled for a Second Amendment platform in the entire United States. He'll be the first one, and I think that's incredibly important. It sets a precedent, and it sets a way for people to fight back. You know, I think it's going to be a spark into the 2014 elections. I really do. But anyway, with that, I'm going to have to go, guys. I hope you guys have a great night, all your listeners, too, all right?
Yep.
Anthony, thanks for taking the time.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And I know that Anthony is putting that in as a Second Amendment issue. This is a Second Amendment issue, but it is much, much more than that to me. And the reason for that is the fact that my representative refuses to acknowledge my viewpoint and the viewpoints of other people in his district and other people in Colorado by changing Senate rules and disenfranchising hundreds of Coloradans and not taking our emails. That is every bit as egregious as his viewpoints on the Second Amendment. Because, like I said, he is acting like a ruler, not a representative. And that is not how our legislators should be. And so those things are very, very distasteful to me. So this is about much more than the Second Amendment, although for a lot of people, that's it. That's what he's going against the Second Amendment. We're going to do something. Great, sign up. But that's not the only thing for me. There's a whole lot of stuff that he has done that goes much, much beyond that. And obviously, it's pretty obvious that I get pretty fired up about this. Just so you know, I've never been involved in politics before this other than voting and sending emails and letters to my representatives. This is the first thing I've ever done. And as Anthony was saying, this is going to be historic when Morse gets recalled, because he will be the first Senate president in the history of the state of Colorado to be recalled. For any reason.
Rob, my co-host, who is normally vocal on this show, Red Beckman, he's been fighting these kinds of battles for, 50 years. And he wrote the book called Walls in Our Minds that gave our show the title that we have. And one of the things that Red did in his book was he exposed the differences between a statesman and a politician. And if you don't mind, I'm just going to take and read these 10 points real quick. Is that all right?
That's fine.
Okay, the difference between statesmen and politicians can become even more visible when you consider the following list of contrast. Number one, a statesman loves the Constitution. A politician hates the Constitution. Two, a statesman enforces the Constitution. A politician violates the Constitution. Three, a statesman uses truth to keep power in the hands of the people. A politician uses lies to gain power over the people. A statesman's primary concern is to secure freedom for future generations. A politician's primary concern is to get elected or reelected. A statesman will not play politics with people's money. A politician will buy votes with tax money. A statesman knows the people must control the government. A politician believes that government should control people. A statesman knows the people must limit government's power to tax. A politician believes government should have unlimited power to tax. Statesman give his allegiance to the people and country. Politicians give his allegiance to government. A statesman will demand a balanced budget. A politician will spend money stolen from future generations, deficit spending. A statesman will cause peace. A politician causes wars. Is that a great list?
That is a great list, and Morris is definitely not a statesman. He
Absolutely.
Is a politician.
And that's reason enough to recall him, and I think we need to recall all of them that exemplify those kind of traits.
I wish we could.
We have to shoot this with a, pardon my pun, but we have to shoot this with a rifle and not a shotgun, right?
That is correct. It is a tremendous amount of work, much more than I ever imagined, to recall just a single politician. It takes thousands of volunteer man hours to obtain that goal. And even with those thousands of volunteer man hours, we are still needing the assistance of some paid petitioners, which other people in Colorado have stepped up to assist with. So it is just flabbergasting how hard this is. But at the same time, as Anthony, or I think it was you, stated earlier, the number of people that have come up and shook my hand and thanked me for doing this is tremendous. And those people that are not in the district, they do say a few choice words when they are not able to sign the petition, because Morris's actions impact all the people in Colorado. Everybody in Colorado is impacted by the legislation he has pushed and his focus on other things besides jobs and the economy. We are all impacted by the millions of dollars of lost revenue by the gun control legislation he has pushed. We are all impacted, or all of the people out in the rural areas that are not even his constituents are definitely impacted by Senate Bill 252 that he sponsored or co-sponsored. And those people have no recourse against the person that is doing something to increase their energy bill significantly. And that also hurts the businesses in the state of Colorado, which in effect decreases revenue for the state of Colorado because it decreases that business tax for those businesses as well. So it is just very, very negative. And there's lots of good reasons to go ahead and recall him now. And yes, he's only got one more session, but look at what he did to us this session and imagine what he would do next session if we don't do something about it. So we really need people to step up. They can go out to gotremorse.com and sign up to volunteer. If you live in the Colorado Springs area or nearby, if you don't, you're welcome to donate. Tell your friends. Let other people know that this is going on. That's been one of the biggest issues, is people do not know this is going on. So if you do Facebook, you can go out to Recall Senator John Morse and like the Facebook page. Follow what we're doing. Like and share the articles and the comments that we're putting out there so that your friends see what we're doing, and then ask them to pass it on to their friends, because we are literally on the front lines of a national battle here in the state of Colorado, and we need other people helping. And it's been in the news that other states have been having the same battle and been defeating it, other than like Connecticut and New York, where you would expect it. But places like Colorado, you don't expect this type of stuff. We have been Californicated, and it is terrible. And many people have written Colorado off. I'm not willing to do that. I'm willing to stand and fight and defend my freedom. And that's what many, many others are willing to do, and that's what we're doing. But we need help in order to do that. So
I'm very encouraged. I'm very encouraged by what I'm seeing in the people, especially in the rural areas of Colorado. You know, inside of Denver and Boulder and Pueblo, it's a tough place. But you know, here in Douglas County, just north of you, you're in El Paso and Colorado Springs. I'm in Douglas, just north of you. And we've got, you know, we don't have a single liberal in an elected office position in our county. I mean, so this is the state of Colorado. I don't believe the results that we've been getting in the elections. I really believe that there's some electronic vote counting fraud going on. And I think that we've got to get a handle on that. If we don't get back to paper ballots, we may never win another election. But it's interesting how much money has been pumped into Colorado, both with DIA, which was an unnecessary airport, especially with the Fed Center. You know, we've got some installations here that have led a lot of people to believe that the One World Order Group, which I, you know, refer to as the international banksters, if you will, have a lot of investment here in Denver, and a lot of indication that they want to make this a stronghold in the Western Hemisphere. And so we really are at ground zero. We are on the front line here, and I believe that most Coloradoans do not want this. And I'm seeing that. I'm seeing a lot of people finally hurting enough that they're starting to take action on this. So it's a great thing to see what you're doing, and it's a great thing to see the support that's coming around this recall. And maybe this is a great rallying point. And I know I'm going to give it everything I've got to make this successful. And I am thankful for you know, the effort that you put into this, and stay the course, because it's extremely important. Is there any like personal stories maybe that you might be able to share that you've experienced? It might be a little either humorous or encouraging. That maybe if there's volunteers out there listening, I just noticed that our buddy Tim put out an email to the volunteers that that you were online right now, and maybe some of them are listening. Is there any story that you'd like to share with them?
Well, the number one thing that I'd like to state is that, as I told you earlier, I've not been actively involved in politics other than voting. And I have met some extremely impressive people that have stepped up and done so much work and just really helped do what needs to be done. And I found out very early on the tenor of what we were going to be seeing. And that was when we had one of our first meetings, and we had probably about 130 people at that first meeting. And I was talking to some folks after the meeting, after I'd introduced myself and explained what we were going to be doing, and we were looking for volunteers and how the petition process worked, and there were a lot of questions about that, and I was explaining all of that. And literally, when I got through talking to people and I looked up, all of the chairs were put away, everything had been cleaned up, and the room that we were in was ready to be exited. And I knew right then that I was dealing with people of character and value, because nobody said, hey, go pick up the chairs or pick up what you need to pick up. It was just done. And unlike the trash left in the parks by Occupy and different groups, it was a different tenor. And I just wanted to say that it impressed me tremendously when I saw that.
Well, I was impressed at that second meeting that I attended, and there was a lot more people than that there.
Well, the second meeting was 160 people, and which was standing room only because we didn't have enough chairs. And that was a snowstorm. And people came out in a snowstorm to attend that meeting, which impressed the heck out of me. And it really impressed upon me that we have a chance to do something here. Now, one of the things that we see as this goes on, and I'm seeing this, is some people are going to step up and help, but they realize, hey, that's a lot of work. I'm not really good at talking to folks, so I'm not going to do anything. My statement to them is, can you stand out there and hold a sign? If you can do that, you can help us. We have other folks that are willing to get the signatures, but when we've got teams of two or three or four people, we need all the help we can get. So if you can stand there and hold a sign, you don't have to talk to anybody. You can hold a sign. You can wave the cars in as they come in. If we've got people that are not collecting signatures, but they're running the website, and they're doing the Facebook, and they're doing the logistical support behind the scenes, it's amazing how much logistical support is required to put together lists for walking neighborhoods and the logistics of getting petitions to people and badges to people and getting things picked up and getting things counted and all of the things behind the scenes that have to be done that people are stepping up to do. A whole lot of stuff happens to be able to have folks come in, pick up a petition and a walking map and go do what they need to do, which is talk to people door to door or stand out on the street corner and have people sign a petition. So there's a lot of work being done by the schedulers and by folks that are doing stuff on the web, and everybody's got talent. In church, we say there's tithing and talent, and we'll take both. So we'll take both. Some people,
well, give those websites one more time, and let people know what you need most.
What we need right now from people in the Colorado Springs area is we need bodies. We need people that are willing to stand out there or hold a sign or help collect signatures. And if you're retired and can work during the week, great. If you can only work on weekends or evenings, we'll take that too. We're on the last hump. We've got 3 weeks left. And we need to hit it hard to be able to get enough of a buffer to create that buffer above and beyond the 7,200 signatures required, so that when they come in and try to start throwing things out because a person didn't cross a T or dot an I on a petition, then we still have enough signatures to get that. And you can go to gotremorse.com. That's GOTREMORSE, gotremorse.com, and you can sign up to volunteer. You can also donate if you don't live in the Colorado area, the Colorado Springs area. You can donate. We have people that are sending in $20 from Tennessee or Nebraska. So I guess we do have some out-of-state money, but it's sure heck not Bloomberg money. It's normal folks like you and me that are just, I can afford a little bit. Here's some little bit, Every little bit counts. So some folks will send in $100. Some folks will send in $10. But we'll take whatever we can because that helps us get flyers out. Right now, as we stated earlier, the opposition has put up lots and lots of radio advertising as well as flyers claiming that we're criminals and sex offenders and telling people not to sign and not to answer their door. And they're also stating that this is an out-of-state effort. We are being led by out-of-state interests, and it's being pushed by out-of-state money, and that is just not true at all. We do have, like I said, the mom and pops. Yeah, we have the mom and pops coming from out-of-state, but that's about it. Now, one of the things I have found, and anybody that's seen, watched politics at all, knows that those who are most guilty usually accuse others of that very thing. So when they're saying, hey, you're an out-of-state interest being run from out-of-state, well, they're being run by Bloomberg, and that's very obvious. Bloomberg helped Morse get elected initially, helped him get reelected, and he's paying back with the gun control bills, and now he's paying him, and now Bloomberg is helping him try to hold on to his office by the skin of his teeth if he can, but he's not going to. But Bloomberg's putting in money to try to rebuff the recall effort. The other thing is they talk about criminals. We're not criminals, but I will put out there that Rhonda Fields is not collecting signatures for us. She's the ex-con representative that is a Democrat, and I'll just let everybody know right now, she's not collecting signatures on our behalf, so you don't have to worry about her coming to your door.
Yeah. You want to give a shout-out to Jeff Crank?
Jeff Crank's a great guy. He has been pushing our effort on his radio station, on his talk show. He came out and did a celebrity signing. I'm actually going to be trying to reach out to him and do one more of those before our time is up to turn in all of these. So he came out to do that early on to Specialty Sports and Paradise Firearms, which are two of our locations where we always have folks for the most part. You can go out to our Facebook page at Recall Senator John Morse. That has a list of our signing locations. That those same signing locations are also on the website at gotremorse.com, and those are on a map. And if you click on the little blue dots that show the signing locations, it will tell you the times and days that we are at those locations. And you can also, you'll be seeing us on more and more street corners between now and June 1st with our signs out there. But if anybody is at home and can't make it out of their house, we've had a few people that due to disabilities or other reasons can't leave their house, don't have a car perhaps, we will come to your house. Feel free to go out and comment on our Facebook page, or there's a contact on the website that you can send an email to us, and we'll send somebody to your house to get that signature. I personally have gone to somebody's house for that very reason, and she was very thankful, but she couldn't get out due to a physical ailment. Doesn't mean she doesn't have a right to sign.
Are we getting saturation in the neighborhoods in that district?
Some neighborhoods, absolutely. There's a couple others that I'm actually going to be talking to the schedulers to find out where we are with that. And we've got some additional – as I told you earlier, we are adjusting our game plan as we go along week to week. And we've got some additional things we're going to be doing that I'm not really going to discuss on this call. But we've got some additional things we're going to be doing that our volunteers are going to see come out over the next few days, and that is going to be helpful for the door-to-door. And we're also looking for folks to help us at the stand at various intersections and hold signs and that kind of stuff. So that's what we've got. The other thing is that as we go along, we are trying to make this fun for folks. So we're having contests for most signatures collected. Right now, we're in the middle of a two-week contest, which ends on Sunday. And the winner of that, whoever collects the most signatures in that two-week period of time, will get a photography session with, and I don't remember off the top of my head, it's 5x7s and an 8x10, as well as the session itself. It's worth a little over $200 for the person that has the most signatures. So we're trying to do stuff like that that's fun to help people go along, because those are just fun things, and people are stepping up to donate. And we greatly appreciate that. We've had another gentleman that sent down some dirty round pro mags, and I've actually got to go through and get the information out to the people that won those for the last weekend. I've got a lot of stuff going on, which obviously keeps me busy, because I'm also doing a full time job during the day. So
well,
I work this at night and on weekends.
That's very exciting, Rob. And I people are always saying, what can I do? What can I do? Well, man, here's a great opportunity. You know, if there was ever a perfect way to put your effort into something that really has great value in defending our Constitution and our republic here in Colorado, this is it. And I just want to encourage everyone, if you're not involved, get involved. And we're going to have State Senator Owen Hill supposed to call in about 13 minutes, 18 minutes from now. And I don't want to keep you, but you're welcome to stick around here and listen to what's going on in some other states. We've got a bunch of folks from New Hampshire that have really been going after it. They're fighting the same similar battles we are, and they're going at it in a big way. So it'd be great for you to listen in and get some ideas about what they're doing. So if that's okay, I'm going to shift gears, but stick around, or at least come back on when State Senator Owen Hill calls in at 15 past the hour.
Well, go ahead, and I'm gonna say adios, and if I happen to drop off, I drop off. If I stay on, I stay on. But I've got to do some work here on my computer as well, so depending on how that goes will depend upon what I do. But take me off the live mic, and I'll push the little button again if I need to come back in.
We'll do that, and just hit the one when you're ready to come back in. And thanks so much, Rob. It's a great effort you're doing. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
Well, I'd like to introduce my good friend who's been a guest on Walls in Our Minds a couple of times before, Gus Breton. Gus, are you there?
Yes, I am, Terry. Thank you.
Hey, I really appreciate you being so patient. Boy, you've got a lot to tell our listeners about what's going on up there. I mean, everything from the complaints that have been filed against 189 representatives, as well as an effort to get an acknowledgement of the existence of the original 13th. I'm just going to give you the floor, and I guess at some point here, Representative John Heichel will be coming on. I will have to break in when State Representative, State Senator Owen Hill calls in a few minutes, about 15 minutes from now, and let him give his experience on what's been going on with the way that the Democrats have been just running roughshod over the people and both houses here in Colorado. But in the meantime, give us some background here, Gus, on what's going on up there. You've got a lot going on.
Well, we've got some pretty neat representation here. The people that run for office get paid $100 a year. So we've got 400 state reps, 24 senators, and the reps get $100 a year. I'm not sure what the senators get. But the people who tend to fill those spots are regular people. And so they seek to correct things as best they can as regular people. And Stella Tremblay is the representative that put in the 13th Amendment bill, which was to recognize that, in fact, the 13th Amendment had been fully ratified. And the evidence of that is in 1818, John Quincy Adams, then Secretary of State, gave a report on the floor of the House saying that, in fact, it had been ratified according to the documentation at the Department of State. So that was something that went through this year, and we have a Democrat House right now, so that was tabled. They don't want that on the floor. And the big thing that happened after that is there's a thing called Stand Your Ground, and there was a provision added to the statutes here a few years ago, and it's got to do with self-defense. And the way the law reads is that you have the right to use force to defend yourself, your property, your life, and so on, at your dwelling or your curtilage. And the language that was added was, or anywhere you have the right to be. It says he or she, but basically anywhere you have the right to be. And there's a retired U.S. Marshal who ran for state rep and was elected this past term, and he just put in a bill, House Bill 135, to remove that language that was put in a few years ago, stating that they want to get rid of that language that says wherever you have the right to be. The problem that creates is that it diminishes your rights. It establishes, now that it's in there, taking it away would diminish your right to defend yourself with force wherever you have the right to be. So if you're at the campground or if you're in the park, anywhere you happen to be, whether it's to defend yourself or a third party, you have to retreat. Now, one of the neat things in there is that further down in the statute, there's an exemption for police officers. Well, the police officers only get the authority that they get, which is delegated to them by the people. So if we have the authority to delegate it to them, then we obviously have the authority to defend ourselves with force wherever we happen to be. So we're looking at this as an absolute violation of our Constitution. One of the things that we have, and I've been looking through the Colorado Constitution for the last couple of hours, and I couldn't find a similar provision. You guys have a much bigger Constitution than we do. But Article 38 of the first part of our Constitution says that the people here in New Hampshire have a right to require of their lawgivers and magistrates an exact and constant observance of the fundamental principles of the Constitution in the formation and execution of the laws necessary for the good administration of government. Now, self-defense, I can't imagine anybody arguing that self-defense is probably the most fundamental principle doctrine that there is on earth. I don't think anything is more fundamental than the right to defend yourself. So what I did is I went through our Constitution and I picked out a lot of the similar provisions that you guys have, where the government is established. For instance, Article 1 is found in the Colorado Constitution. It says that the government is founded upon their will only. So, here you have a senator who's changing the rules of your committee hearings. How is he supposed to know what is according to your will only, the will of the people, which is Article 1 of your Bill of Rights, if he doesn't hear from those people? And then Section 2 of your Bill of Rights says that you have the exclusive right to govern themselves. Okay, the people have the exclusive right to govern themselves. Well, they govern themselves by giving suggestions and testifying at committee hearings. So he's obviously violating the Constitution. And in violating the Constitution, he's depriving the people of Colorado their rights. Just like, you know, the same thing we've got going on here with self-defense. And if you look at Webster's 1828 dictionary, you'll see two kind of really neat definitions of property. Webster used the color of light. If you take light and you put it through a prism, you'll get color on the other side. That color is part of that light. It's a property of that light. And in the same way, excellence is the property of a poem. You cannot separate the excellence from the poem any more than you can separate the color from the light, or any more than you can separate self-defense from the people. Okay, these are property rights. And when you try to infringe on those property rights, what you're actually doing is you're moving the property line. You're reducing the property of those people. So it's stealing. And 18 U.S.C. 241 regarding conspiracy, and then 18 U.S.C. 242 deals with color of law violations. And 18 U.S.C. is a criminal charge. And it says, whoever under color of any law, statute, ordinance, regulation, or custom is what's used to describe common law, willfully subjects any person in any state, territory, commonwealth, possession, or district to the deprivation of any rights, privileges, or immunities secured or protected by the Constitution or laws of the United States, or to different punishments, pains, or penalties on account of such persons being an alien. And it goes on to describe, you know, the criminal punishment that happens when somebody violates your rights and reduces your property. So what we did is John Heichel, who's my state rep, and John, if you're on here, Terry, I believe you've got his phone number to unmute him if he comes on. But John Heichel, who's a third-term state rep, and Jack Kimball, who ran for governor for the Republican ticket 4 years ago, they got together talking about oath of office violations. I happened to be at that meeting with the two of them. We were just hanging out and talking about oath of office violations and how do you hold these people accountable. Jack was putting on an honor your oath rally. Jack Kimball. And John Heichel had put in a bill to examine the oaths of office to figure out how to hold people accountable. So they got together, and then we were talking about what do you do? What's the hands-on, boots-on-the-ground thing that somebody can do to hold people accountable? Well, these violations are, for instance, your right to self-defense. And I know that some of the things that you guys are talking about in Colorado is gun rights. These things are... their property, right? So obviously, it amounts to stealing property. But further, let me pull up your Constitution again. I think it's in Article 15. Yeah, Article 15, private property shall not be taken or damaged for public or private use. That's in the Colorado Article 15. We have a similar provision in the New Hampshire Constitution. And when you think of self-defense and when you think of Second Amendment rights, your right to defend yourself and to protect the state belongs to you. And then when it is reduced in in this capacity, what they're doing is they're actually passing on the responsibility to protect the public and to protect the people. They're passing that on to the police officers, to the state guard or whatever you happen to have. Well, those are private corporations in the de facto world. These are private municipal corporations. And so under eminent domain, they're violating that provision of the Constitution also. And if you go through your Constitution, you'll find all sorts of examples of how they're violating that Constitution, which is a violation of their oath of office. If they have breached their oath of office, they're no longer qualified to hold a position in government and need to be thrown out. So that's what we did here. We filed a petition against 189 state reps to remove them from office for being no longer qualified to hold that position. And because it's a violation against rights, property rights, stealing people's property, we also filed criminal charges with the U.S. Attorney's Office. Myself, Jack Kimball, and John Heichel did that. And we sat with the assistant attorney. He questioned us about our intent, and we gave him, I think it was a 14-page document, including the laws that we thought they had violated. And so that was filed, I believe, on April 9th. I'm not positive, but might have been a little later in the week. It was on a Friday of that week, whatever that Friday was. But that's it, John. If you're on the line, please say hello. Hey, John.
Yeah, how are you?
I'm good. I don't know how much you've heard. We've been talking about a senator in Colorado that's doing similar things, reducing people's property rights. And I don't know if you want to just chime in. And
why don't you give him an introduction, Gus, so our listeners know who John is.
All right. Well, John is my state rep. He's in his third term. He's a very good friend of mine. He's my mechanic. He works on my car. And I swing by his garage, and we hang out. And while he's working on cars, we talk politics whenever possible. And he's dedicated to representing the people. He's seen enough of the give and take of politics, and he's had enough of that. And he wants to see people have accountability. How do you hold your government accountable? And that's really what he's striving for. He's a great guy, and he's a good friend. Go ahead, John.
Well, what can I say? I mean, how can I follow that? But, what he said is absolutely true. I work 5 or 6 days right alongside my mechanics and myself. I fix the cars myself. I'm representing the people. I don't want to represent the state or the corporation or the commissioners or directors I represent the people that elected me, and overwhelmingly I'm absolutely fed up with the amount of foreclosures that we've had. The people are desperately hurting. Taxes are not going down. We have a lot of major issues here to fight right on our doorstep that are threatening, I think, our security and the way of life that we know it to be. And I'm 50, almost 55. I mean, I've seen come up through the 60s and 70s and 80s, and I kind of I'm in the state house amongst people that I think are friends, and I rarely find people who are really willing to put their neck on the chopping block and be the one that wants to hold the rest of them accountable. And I did that. I came out front and I filed the first petition of redress, which New Hampshire has that in their constitution. And it's quite clear what it says, and nobody wants to believe it. Nobody's probably ever seen it till I started mentioning it maybe last year or this year. I tell people on the radio and TV, wherever I go, you keep saying you want to take your government back. The only way to do it is to hold your representatives accountable, and if it isn't, throw them out. And I don't have any problem. This isn't political. This isn't partisan. I don't care if it's Democrat, Republicans. I'm not happy with either one of them. I happen to be a Republican, but I'm not really favored by them either, because I have the judges and the high leadership Republican judges and lawyers in that party upset, because they're afraid that if we continue down this road of being able to redress or remedy people's damages that the government has done to them, then it's going to probably take work away from the courts and the lawyers. So But I don't care. I'm in this to save our country and save our state. Absolutely, period, without a question. And I, it cost me an awful lot of money to spend a day or two a week in Concord and not in my garage. But I think it's a worthwhile investment. And when the people are tired of me, they'll tell me to go home. So I want to represent the people truly of the folks that that voted me in there, and I tell them all the time. And if it's one person that's been damaged, that's one too many. And I want to know. I want everybody to know that this person deserves to be treated as well and as serious as the masses. So if you damage one, you damage. You might as well damage everybody, in my opinion. I don't know.
Well,
I can.
John, I'm looking at the Colorado Constitution, and their Section 24 is very much like our Article 31 and 32. There says that the people have the right peaceably to assemble for the common good and to apply to those invested with the powers of government for redress of grievances by petition or remonstrance. And that's pretty much what Article 32 says. Redress that John was talking about, that's kind of neat, in the New Hampshire Constitution is the legislature shall assemble for the redress of public grievances and for making such laws as the public good may require. And what's really causing people concern is John is pushing, saying the legislature shall assemble for the redress of public grievances. It's not optional. It's a mandate. And that's what John's doing that's really getting people nervous.
Absolutely. And they know what that means, except everybody always focuses on the Second Amendment, the right to bear arms, the, you know, search and seizure and right to remain silent and speedy trial, you know, that kind of stuff. But nobody ever gets much past Article 10 in the New Hampshire Constitution. They're kind of, you know, states' rights, all the politicians pull it out of their pocket and they show it when they're campaigning. Look, I got a constitution in my pocket. But I would doubt if any of them have really read it anywhere near as many times as I have and really have an understanding. And it's simple English. It's not complicated at all. And I was told by in the newspaper, one of the judges that came out, he was a Superior Court judge. He was a Supreme Court judge in New Hampshire. He was a congressman, and he's the head lobbyist for the Judges Association now. So he's done all the right things in life to put him in the position that he is, and he called me constitutionally illiterate, and that me trying to force 189 legislators out of office is just wrong, and it's, infantile or whatever he called me. I mean, I was shocked. I've known this guy. I've actually liked him for 20 years. And I thought to myself, I go, what nerve did I hit so deep in that particular vein that he spent time to write an op-ed to assassinate me? I mean, out of all the other things he could have written, of all the things that are going wrong around us, he picks me, somebody that, you know, has his personal phone numbers that calls him and chats with him every once in a while. I was shocked, but I'm not intimidated. So, I don't want to go back. I don't want to go against him, for instance, but I just need to keep stating my case to the people. We have the right to redress. That's the purpose of the legislature to meet. We must have statutes. We must have laws for the good administration of government. We must be frugal. We must be industrious. We must be, Article 38. We need to understand this stuff. And we have an Article 2, for instance, on the right to bear arms. But it even codifies that even finer, even more detail of a 2A. I don't know if Gus told you this, but all persons shall defend themselves, their family, their property, and the state. I mean, all persons have the right to defend themselves. And when anybody sponsors a piece of legislation to diminish those rights and they vote for it, I believe that they have violated their oath of office and the Constitution that they swore to support of New Hampshire and the United States. So I'm not telling them to leave. I don't want them to leave. They voted against it. You know, Article 30 talks about deliberation, and it talks about they can speak on it. They have every right to be wrong. They have every right to be thinking wrong, but when they push the button and vote yes or no to remove some of your unalienable rights, then they should be held accountable. And under RSA 92:2 in New Hampshire, it says that, you know, you have to take a sworn oath of office to sit in the seat of the legislature to vote, or you can't vote. And if you violate that oath, you shall be removed. So we have Constitution and we have statute, I think, defending my position. And here we have Supreme Court judges and lawyers and, I mean, the highest echelon in both parties, you know, very concerned, which is, I mean, again, it's fine with me. I'm not going to be intimidated, and
Representative Heichel, may I introduce a gentleman who I was expecting to call in at this time, Colorado State Senator Owen Hill. And Senator Hill, I believe that we're in the middle of a conversation that's really ideal for you, because we were just talking about Gus Breton, who is also online with us, has just got through looking over the Colorado Constitution, and they have filed complaints, a formal complaint against many of those representatives up in New Hampshire for doing similar things to what we've been seeing here during this last legislative session in Colorado. And I'd just like to give you an opportunity. We spent about the first hour talking about the John Morse recall, but I'd really like for you to, in addition to giving us a little bit of feeling of what's been going on in the Senate, talk about maybe even the frustration that you've been facing. You know, you've been in a tough situation, and I'd like for you to be able to share a little bit about that. Tell the listeners who you are and a little bit of your background, how you got in this, and share about what's going on in Colorado.
Well, good evening to you all, gentlemen, and thank you very much for hosting us tonight. It's a real honor to be on with you guys. I was just listening to the representative talk, and really it's just fun to hear men and women who know so much about the Constitution, the laws, and really have a passion for upholding this idea that we're a nation of laws and not of people. So I'm just as blessed to listen as I am to say anything, but sure, it's an honor to be on. This is my first year in the legislature up here. Saw what was going on and actually had a chance to run against the majority leader, but now our president, Senator John Morse, in 2010, and just barely lost by a couple hundred votes and got redistricted, and now we're back. And it's fun to say, how can we bring new energy and recognize that conservative values always look forward and say, how do we always, despite the times, preserve the liberties of the people? And so it's been a frustrating, but honestly, a very fun challenge as well.
Nice. Senator, thank you.
Go right ahead. Gus, maybe you'd like to revisit what you were talking about just a moment ago regarding Article 24 of the Colorado Constitution and give Senator Hill a little bit of an idea about the complaint that you guys have filed in New Hampshire.
All right. There was a bill that was put in, a House bill. It was House Bill 135 regarding Stand Your Ground, and there was some language that was added to the statutes here in New Hampshire a couple of years ago, two, 3 years ago, that the language that was added was in regards to self-defense and using force, and the language said before the addition that you could defend yourself at your dwelling or your curtilage, and they added the language, or wherever you have the right to be. And now HB 135 is to remove that language. It's got people very upset. And in removing that language, it diminishes our right to self-defense, to use force. And as you know, our rights are property, because you cannot separate a man from his rights. But they belong to him. They are property rights. And so we drew up a petition for redress, which was filed in early April, and also filed criminal charges around the second week of April. John, Representative Heichel, who's with us now, and Jack Kimball, who ran for governor here 4 years ago, and I, we went to the U.S. Attorney's Office and filed criminal charges based on the activity of 189 state reps. Article 30 in our Constitution protects their ability to speak and debate and deliberate on particular bills, but once they vote, they've actually taken an action, which can be the cause of litigation. So we've gone ahead and filed criminal charges.
What's been the response so far?
We, pardon my French, but we've pissed off a lot of people.
Well, I'll certainly congratulate you on that. We need more of that in the world.
We also did that. This is John Heichel. We also did that. We also filed with county sheriffs as well, because they have the oath of office to protect us. So we filed with the sheriff. I filed with two sheriffs. My Hillsborough County sheriff. I filed with another county sheriff that is a Concord. That Concord is in, as well as the U.S. attorney. And I filed the redress petition with the clerk of the House. So I kind of covered all my ground, and one is criminal and the other is, they're talking about rules and they're talking about other things. And I keep bringing up the fact about Miranda versus Arizona, where rights are secured, there can be no rulemaking or legislation that will abrogate them. And I keep saying that whenever somebody talks about we're going to take this to the Rules Committee. Well, I'm telling you, I don't think that the Rules Committee is going to count on this, because I think these rights are secured, and these rights, the rights that you want to take away from us are secured, and I don't think any rulemaking will abrogate those rights. So I say that to them, so I'm just using their words. I'm not using my words. I don't want to kick anybody out of the legislature. I just want them accountable and understand that if they have to leave, whoever takes their place is going to understand that they better take this job serious and not just be the ones led around by their nose ring to vote a particular way based on leadership. Because frankly, I have too much to do with my work and my private life. I could be enjoying every day. So if I'm going to go do this, I want them to. I want to be held accountable, and I want everybody else to. Because if there's no recourse in somebody violating their oath, then why do we take it in the first place?
Well said.
So that's what we do. I mean, I want to take it serious. And I'm just using their laws. I'm using their constitution. I'm using words that somebody else made a long time ago that, when I was, before I was even here or before I cared about, any statutes at all. So now I'm using their words, and they don't like it because they like to create as much confusion and smoke and everything else as long as everybody stays confused, they know that their mission will be carried out. And hopefully,
Representative Heichel?
Yes.
You filed that complaint. It's my understanding that others have filed that complaint as well?
Yes. Others. It's tough finding them. I mean, I think there's three or four others of us. There's a few. We have
We have, but the answer is yes. We have 3 or 4, I think. I don't know why we don't have 300 or 400, but we have 3 or 4. You know, because it's tough to find good, solid, constitute. You know, everybody will call himself a particular thing, but when the rubber hits the road, you know, you see how many of them, you know, throw it in park and sit on the side. Because it's, I'm just watching it going, Jesus, these people and this person, and you start picking, you start wondering, why aren't they as committed as they were when they got you involved in the fight in the first place? You know, what made them back out? Because they want to run for Congress, they want to, you know, they want to do this, they want to get reelected. You know, they're going to have to hang out with their wife all day instead of hanging out in Concord all day. I don't know what the motivation is, but they get really concerned. And I act and vote when I'm in Concord like I could care less if anybody ever wants to vote for me again. And I'm doing what I need to do now to save my state and to save my country. And I'm hoping I'm looking at it right, because sometimes when you're alone looking at something different than everybody else, I question whether or not I'm looking at it correct. But I think I am in this instance.
John, I'm curious. You know, we've had a bit of tension, honestly, between our elected sheriffs out here in Colorado and the laws that have been passed. And there have certainly been a few courageous ones have stood up and said they were not going to enforce these laws as they were antithetical to the oaths they took to defend the Constitution of Colorado. Have you all seen some of that tension out there in New Hampshire?
Well, it seems like the Sheriff Association, I mean, the other sheriff that I filed that other criminal complaint with, he's in charge of the State Sheriff Association, or whatever you'd call it. And, you know, they're definitely, I think maybe one sheriff maybe dared to step, you know, put his toes in the water. But for the most part, the rest of the sheriffs, you know, even though they're the only ones that have the truth, that has the oath, they really work for the police department. They really work. You know, they're just a continuation. They're there to protect us, but they don't protect us. They are protecting the law enforcement agencies and the county prosecutor, and it's all them against us, even though they have that oath. And frankly, I'd like to hold them accountable as well. And this is how I think this is the way that we're going to do it, is to hold them accountable based on their violation of that oath. And we've got to somehow write legislation that says what happens if you violate it. I mean, you know, the problem is that, you know, and I keep going back to, I'm on the planning board also. I'm the chair of the planning board in my local town here. And we had a planning board meeting tonight. We swore in 3 alternates. And the selectman reads them the oath and, you know, and they raise their right hand and they swear after him to uphold the Constitution. And I asked him, I said, well, what Constitution are you asking them to uphold? I mean, it didn't specify, so we have 2 here. Which one, you know, we have probably more than 2, but let's just say the popular 2. Which sure. one are you asking them to uphold, to support, and to whatever that oath said? So I questioned that stuff, and then I also said, you know, if there is no penalty for it, why do we even administer an oath? Just for, you know, it's just
hey, John.
It's like I go to meetings, so I don't want to take all your time. I go to meetings sometimes, and I'll have, you know, 3 national anthems. We'll say 5 prayers in a day. We'll say, you know, 10 pledge of allegiances. And someday we don't say any. So where's the, you know, does it make me more or less patriotic if I don't do it once a day? And if I do it 10 times, well, does it make me more? And we just do these symbolic things, but all we seem like we're hooked on symbols.
Yeah, we all agree we need to do something, and that's the conversation we had a couple of months ago, that, you know, we need to start doing things that cause some kind of an effect. And so we pursued redress. And here in New Hampshire, the redress petitions stalled out about 100 years ago. So the law, the New Hampshire Constitution has been the same since 1784. Excuse me. And that provision that you guys have in Colorado Section 24 is the same as what we have in Article 32. And so the actions that we're doing here, the petition that John filed is using Article 31 and 32. You guys have it all contained in Article 24 of your Constitution, but the people of Colorado have a right to peaceably assemble for the common good and to apply to those invested with the powers of government for redress and grievances by petition or remonstrance. Remonstrance is a very bold, strong language. There's some background noise. I don't know if there's somebody making some noise there. But in Colorado, you guys have that same. If the people have the right to peaceably assemble, then, you know, for the common good and to apply to those invested with the powers of government for redress, then it's only reasonable to assume that they have to listen to those petitions. You know, what good would it be to have the right to petition if nobody has the requirement to listen?
And right.
Another thing that people don't realize, Article 4 of the federal Constitution, the United States Constitution, Section 2 says that the citizens of each state shall be entitled to all privileges and immunities of the citizens of the several states. So the people in Colorado could literally use Article 31 and 32 of the New Hampshire Constitution and say, we have the same privileges and immunities as the citizens of the rest of the states. And whereas the people of New Hampshire have a right to petition, we're bringing it here. We're bringing it home. And Article 4, Section 2 of the U.S. Constitution provides that it shall be the same everywhere. Nobody has more rights in one place than another. So there's a lot you guys can do with that.
Senator Hill, the complaint that they filed is in that email promotion for the show that I sent you.
Yes,
right
sir.
Right under John Heichel's name, there is a couple of links, and you can actually read the petition that they, the complaint, the formal complaint petition that they filed is right there on that link. So you can see that. And I will also tell you that if you want to pursue anything like that or sponsor anything like that, I'll be glad to pull a bunch of petitioners together that will go along with it. They've got 500 people now that have signed on to that same complaint in New Hampshire.
Fantastic. You know, you hit on an important point. I think it's necessary for us to appreciate the Constitution, to recognize where we are, that sometimes I struggle just bringing up all these articles and Constitution saying we're allowed to do this stuff when the problem is they don't respect the Constitution. So, right, if people actually value the Constitution, then our right to keep and bear arms and not have that infringed upon, we wouldn't be in this situation in the first place. So it's always a struggle for me as we talk about, well, the Constitution gives us protection for this, and yet we're trying to fight a group of people who don't think the Constitution holds sway, partly because it's an old document, partly because it's against what they want to do, their vision for a society without some of the problems, some of the ills that they see in the short term.
Well, see, we talk a lot about the Second Amendment, and that does get people riled up when their, you know, rights, their unalienable rights that are reserved there in the Bill of Rights is infringed upon. That gets them upset. But the fact of the matter is what we're talking about goes way beyond that. And the more important
right.
thing here is that these people have refused to listen to their constituents. And
right.
what we're talking about here is a strict violation of their oath of office, and they need to be held accountable for that in particular, because a lot of these other issues are related to that. If they can change the rules and violate their oath of office in the process and then not allow the people to seek a redress of their grievance, then they need to be removed for that and no other reason. That's sufficient in and of itself. and applies to all the various issues that where they are trampling on the voice of the people.
Absolutely. And you know, one of the things that's so exciting about watching these recalls and some of these petitions is there is a rekindling of the conservative fire that says, no, this a government of the people, by the people, and for the people requires us to be involved. And for too long, I think we've been complacent to say, oh, your civic duty is to fill out a ballot once every couple of years. And it is exciting to see a growing number of people who say, you know what, enough is enough. I am going to get involved. I'm going to make sure that government responds to our collective will. And so it's exciting to see that, although it's sad to see what circumstances have brought it about.
Gus, did you have another comment there?
Well, one of the things I'm looking at Section 1 of your Bill of Rights in Colorado, and it says that all political power is vested and derived from the people. All government of right originates from the people, comma, is founded upon their will only, and comma, and is instituted solely for the good of the whole. Now, if it's founded upon their will only, and this senator has chosen to not allow hearings, you know, not allow the people's voice to be heard in chambers during committee hearings, then how is he supposed to find out what their will is? This is your Bill of Rights, number one. So he's absolutely violating the Constitution. You know, and in doing so, he's violating U.S. Title 18, federal law, Title 18 U.S.C. 242.
And he's gone on national television and admitted it.
Right.
In other words,
right.
It's not an accident or it's not negligence on his part here that the rules were changed and the people's voice wasn't heard. It was a willful effort on the part of the president of the Senate who gave that specific instruction to other senators that were like-minded socialist or communist here in Colorado. And he is doing it deliberately. It is not an accident. He understands clearly what he is doing, and he needs to be called on the criminal act that is. And I see this as a perfect opportunity for us to demonstrate to these people that the will of the people of Colorado will not be trampled upon. And it's a great opportunity for the minority at this point who has had to stand aside and just basically watch these guys ramrod New York policy through our state. It is a perfect opportunity for the minority to be able to have the people rally around them. It will actually perhaps build momentum for the next interim election. I see this as a great opportunity.
I couldn't agree more with you there. It is not just a great opportunity in the short run, but in the long run, I think it's important for us to view our civic participation more as a muscle, something that has to be trained, it's something that has to be developed. And perhaps it's atrophied over time, and we're seeing a re-strengthening, a reinvigoration of the energy to come and participate. And back to you mentioned it's their duty to uphold the will of the people. I think this is one of the tragedies we see in the lack of historical thinking and knowledge in our culture as a whole, but especially in many of our elected officials, that they view elections as mandates. And they should be mandates. They should be mandates to uphold the Constitution, as their oath says, but instead they've come to be viewed as mandates to go in and enact everything that they stand for, their entire agenda. And because you want an election, it therefore means that the will of the people is to do everything that you want to do. And I really see that, and that call it arrogance, if you will, but I certainly see that as the mentality, especially out here in Colorado this year. Did y'all see that in New Hampshire? Are you seeing some of that same? Again, it has nothing to do with kind of long-term tradition and constitutional values, but nope. Every election, whoever gets elected, it's their job to do 100% of everything they think should be done.
John?
That's
Well, I might have scared him off.
It wasn't a yes or no question, really.
I don't know if he's still with us. But yeah, we
I'm sorry, I have it on mute. I'm sorry.
Okay, go ahead, John.
Well, in New Hampshire, you know, what I would like to do by the petition that I filed is not wait for people to get so upset that they vote out their representatives and senators every 2 years. You know, what I want is accountability today, and tomorrow face what you did today, and either be removed or don't violate rights. So, you know, and that's part of the political game that I'm frankly tired of. And I've been playing that game for quite a while in intensely. And when I see it happen, you know, yeah, maybe we can show everybody how egregious the Democrats have been treating the Republicans and how overtaxing and over-regulating and over everything they've been. So the next wave is going to kick them out, and the Republicans are going to come in. And it's just a high tide, low tide thing that just goes on in perpetuity. And what I'd like to do is hold them accountable today for this vote. You know, Gus talked about HB 135, which happened to be a stand your ground bill, and it's an emotional issue. Gun owners come out and they want to talk. I mean, if it happens to pass, I'm going to be on top of the world because everybody's going to be calling for everybody's resignation, and I'm going to be in the beginning of this pack. The bad thing is, if it doesn't pass, if it's killed in the Senate, for instance, then everybody's going to kind of forget about it and go, we made it. I'm not letting that pressure down. These people could have taken away some of our rights, and they need to be held accountable. And I don't want to wait until 2014 to do it. And I don't want to lose more rights before 2014 to hold these people accountable. I want them gone now. You want to remove 1 inch of my property line, then you have to leave. And if you want to take away any of my ability to protect myself, my family, my home, my property, or my state, then you've got to leave. And I want that now. I want them held accountable now. And that's the problem with, you know, the difference between I don't want to wait till 2016 to get rid of Obama, frankly. I don't want to wait till, you know, if he's violated his oath or anybody's violated their oath, and not just Obama, but, you know, my state senators, my state my U.S. senators, my U.S. congressmen. And that's where I'm at this point in my life. I'm not playing this political game to see, but a lot of my friends do that are elected. And they're playing this political game. How much ammunition can we get against them? So in 2014, there'll be another landslide and a tidal wave, and we'll take all them out. Well, you know what? We're still going to be left with all of our side that is just as bad as a whole, possibly just as bad as a whole. And, you know, we've got rhinos, we've got people out there that, I heard one of the head Republicans in the state say we all told a whole group of us legislators standing there, we all support the, you know, she was referring to me, she was referring to what I did, and in front of a large group of people, she said, you know, we all support the Constitution. And all I was standing there going, I wanted to just say out loud, you and somebody in this room name one thing in the Constitution, just name anything, I don't care. I don't care if you say table of contents. You just tell me one thing that's written in that Constitution. I didn't say
that. And you weren't
that.
talking about the general welfare clause in the preamble, I'm guessing, right?
I don't care. Tell me. Just show me that you've opened the book. Show me that you've actually read a line out of it. Quote something. And you know, when when these GOP leaders, I don't care what leaders they are, when they say we support the Constitution, yeah, quote me one line out of it. Just quote me one line. I'll take one line out of 50 pages. I'll be happy with that if you can do that. And then they'll do something that they probably had in their stump speech, and that's the extent of their knowledge of it. But that's
right.
Truly, you know, Senator and everybody else, my goal is not to wait to 2014 and 2016 to show everybody how bad we've been damaged. I mean, a lot of damage is going to happen in the next 2 years. And it can
right.
happen in the next 4 years. That's what I'm saying. And if I'm sitting there with, out of 400 legislators, if there's only 10 of us sitting in there because they haven't had special elections yet, so be it.
Right.
You know,
absolutely. And I certainly encourage it, and that's part of why we're supporting it out here in Colorado. Is maybe it's time to take a page from the progressive playbook and say we're always campaigning. We're always and in some ways I think that can be helpful. I think, again, back to that analogy that civic participation is a muscle, that we continue to train it, and we train it and hone it in on those people who would violate the Constitution. So I'm certainly energized by all your passion on this, John. Thank you so much.
Well, my pleasure. Thank you for just understanding and becoming a part of it out there. Because imagine if we're two guys in the whole country. Imagine if we had, you know, 26 states trying something like this. Imagine if we had as many states trying this as the states that they want, you know, other things in. I'll say same-sex marriage. They want that nationalized. Well, I don't care. Well, you know, I mean, we all have a right to kind of probably do whatever we want. I mean, in the reality of the whole thing, if you really want to be constitutional and righteous, but I go, you know, they started with one state, then they hoping that the rest of the states would do it, and then finally Congress would go, well, you know what, every state legalized it, so I guess we have to do it now. I would love to see the movement of keeping your representatives accountable and have that movement start and have that go to 50 states, and eventually it's just an accepted practice that you don't take that position unless you're ready to be thrown out once you violate the people's rights that put you in office. And so all these little movements start with one minor thing, and hopefully I hope we can get this momentum across. I tell other representatives in other states, and it's a one by one thing. And so if there's anything we can do to help you along, I mean, I've been in touch with Magpul, for instance. You know, when you hear about the shooting in Aurora, you know, we're really in tune with that because we love our guns here in New Hampshire. And when I hear of what they're doing in Colorado, maybe it's not true, maybe it is. But maybe Magpul, you know, is riding this wave of a you know, accessory shortage and magazine shortage and all that stuff that they're doing, and they're just really not going to move anywhere else. I don't know what their plan is, but
yes,
no,
they're definitely going to move. They're definitely out there looking for a place to move. I mean, can you picture an industry that says, hey, we produce something that the enthusiast and the people who work for us aren't even legally allowed to own?
I can't even imagine. And you tell them, if you know them, tell them New Hampshire would welcome them tomorrow, because we've got land right here ready to break ground for them. I mean, we've got buildings open ready for it. And you know, we love our guns here in New Hampshire. We love the idea
right.
of self-defense. So when I hear this kind of stuff, it really resonates home with me.
Right.
And that's not all, but I, you know, you think of the Wild West, you think of Colorado. I was out in Oregon. I was out in California. Forget talking about guns out there. But I was out in Oregon. I landed in Reno. I was thinking, yeah, I'm in Reno. You know, Jesus. I mean, the old cowboys and everybody's six shooters and everything. And they tell you how you can transport a gun through the state in Nevada and Oregon. I'm up in the middle of absolute nowhere, and they tell you that you can conceal it, but just not on you. And they wouldn't suggest open carrying it. This is the state police. I called each state that I was traveling to. And I go,
well,
I carry wherever I go. I'm protecting myself wherever I go. But they told me how to do this. California said, lock it in the trunk, don't touch it, separate the ammo from the gun, and do not touch it, leave it alone, and just keep it far away from you.
Right, right. And put the firing pin somewhere else, and pretty much you have to reassemble your gun if you in time to use it if you're being attacked, huh?
I don't know if you would dare to assemble it if you're being attacked. You know, you might have to use it as a hammer because you...
That's a good point.
You know, what are you going to do? And that's my, I mean, talk about violating our Second Amendment right. I mean, if the Constitution is in full force and effect, and if the, the Second Amendment means what it says, because you get scholars that tell you that it doesn't really mean that you have the right to carry a gun. It just tells you that you have a right to, form a well-regulated militia and so forth and so on. I'm not really, but I read this stuff and everything is so contradictory.
Right.
And Democrats and Republicans, they all can justify, you know, I'm sure dictators could justify, what they did to people too. When they slaughter a million folks or so or more, they can
right.
certainly justify it either through the Bible or through their through their constitution, they can somehow justify anything. And, and it would be nice to have a definition of what the Constitution actually is. It's this book. It's the supreme law of the land. How come, if it's the supreme law of the land, how come we don't all know that? How come we can't all recite it by second grade? I don't get it. You know, I mean, those are things that, we're worried about core... And learning and
common standards, common core.
Common core standards. Yeah, what could be more common core than the Constitution? I mean, the kids should understand these are your rights. They don't want to teach it. They don't want us to know this. And they keep
Senator
it up here.
Hill?
Yes, sir.
We've got about 3 minutes left, and I've noticed that in the aftermath of all the anti-gun stuff, there's been a lot of other legislation that has been slid through and rammed down the throats of the people and of the conservatives in the legislature that had just been, been sliding right on in there without getting the same fight from the people. I'd like for you to share your experience about that and then maybe tell the people of Colorado what they can do now to best help the minority in the legislatures.
Well, maybe I'll start with that, Todd. And look, what you can do now is, first of all, start praying. Look, at some point, if we don't call out to a higher being to say there is right and wrong, to say that there is truth and there is falsehood, and recognize that transcends just whatever we feel like in the moment or whatever
Amen.
Food we had for dinner and the indigestion it causes. If we can't get back to that notion, then how in the world are we going to get back to an idea that the Constitution might be the supreme law of the land? So maybe that's the first thing. I'll mention a couple of the laws. We passed some same-day voter registration laws. All you need is a printout that shows your address to register to vote. Not provisional ballot, mind you, but you can show up and vote on the same day. And if you don't have an ID, you can just give them the last four of your Social Security number, which is completely you can't use it with any database to verify citizenship whatsoever. So that was, in my opinion, that might have been one of the biggest laws that got through here, one of the biggest tragedies, just in cheapening this idea of what it is to vote and what civic participation really looks like. But there have been others in terms of significantly increasing the renewable portfolio standard for our rural electric co-ops, these things that are going to significantly increase the price of energy for those who can least afford it, and all in the name of really it's in the name of this green energy stuff, but the tragedy is when you look at it, it's really just a transfer from the taxpayer to these big businesses that are providing these green energy services. So those would just be a couple of them. But then for people who want to get involved, look, there's no substitute for getting to know your legislators. And I'll tell you, the folks in the Senate, the folks in the House out here, county commissioners, they're eager to get to know you and to sit down. And hopefully if you have a good one, they spend more time listening than they do talking. So sit down with them, get to know them, and look them up. On almost everyone on the website has their own email address or cell phone number. Sit down with them, take them out to coffee, have them over to your house, have a group of friends over, and build that relationship, because I firmly believe outside of relationship, we can't have a government of the people, by the people, for the people. And I just want to thank you guys for hosting us tonight. We sure appreciate it.
Gentlemen, thank you so much. Excellent show. Real quick, if we have just a half a second left, thank you, Senator Hill. Representative Heichel, will there be a public hearing on that complaint?
I hope so, but it's, I want to say it's up to the discretion of the speaker. She can probably bring it forward any time this year. I get a feeling that it's, you know, somebody talk, I get a feeling it's going to go nowhere, but that's the next step is, you know, what do? This is new territory for me. I can fix any car. I don't know what to tell the speaker if she doesn't want to bring it out of her, you know, if she doesn't want to pull out of her garbage can.
Gentlemen, thanks again. Gus, thank you very much. We are totally out of time. We will be back here next Thursday night with Walls in Our Minds.
It was a real pleasure. Thank you.
God bless you, friends. Good night.
God bless you, too.